all what we wanted today was to deal with this issue of conformity in this industry, and we invited quite a number of them, particularly Thomas Trump. Now, you recall that last week all of us were not around. Now, what this industry has done now, sent in the CEO of the association, what do we call it, the association?
Yes.
Now, this is where I want your wisdom. Because the issue, to remember, even in tourism that you wanted to raise was transformation in this sector. And we wanted all the big and small to say, you know, what is happening, you know. So I'm subject to your advice. Secondly, I think Michael was also informed late that he had to come and represent the association, and that's why he didn't send any documentation in time. Only now that we're trying to make. So I'll ask for your wisdom and your suggestion. What we're doing today is not what we wanted. We still want those industries. We want the big guys, we want the big fishes, we want the small fishes, so that we are all around the table and talk about this thing. Michael might not be in a position to ask, to answer some of the questions that we might have, because they would relate to a specific issue, maybe to a specific company, then you won't be able. Maybe you will be able. So I ask for your suggestion and your advice and your wish. Yes, please.
Chairperson, we've got the CEO of SATSA here, through no fault of his own. So I believe that because it's one of our portfolios, we give him a fair hearing. That's point number one. Then, when he is not here anymore, then we take up the matter on those that are not responding to our requests as a committee.
Okay. That's the feeling of the house. Hello, Sinclair.
I don't know what to say. I suppose you're trying to probe us to say that we must relook at our meeting today and so on. I don't have a problem with that. I don't know if the CEO has got input or suggestion from his side if you want to contribute and so on. But the other issue is I don't see any from the departments of tourism staff here and officials and so on. Certainly they've also got a say in this matter, and I don't know what is the reason for that.
If I may, Chair,
the reason why the department isn't here, the Tourism Business Council is not part of the department. It's a separate, not an entity, a separate organization. It represents the tourism industry, private sector organization, number one. Number two, I'm here to monitor. I thought they will be here. We have a hotline going on in Pretoria, so all the officials, the ministry included, are at the Lakotla. Thank you, Chair.
Just to confirm that we do have a letter saying the very same thing from the department. But that's one other issue, because if they were not having a Lakotla, would have also expected them to be here, one official. But there is a valid reason they are having a Lakotla. So that's another matter, because this talks into tourism, whether they also come and observe, just like Mr. Turan, but Honorable Sinclair is correct, who is supposed to have some of them. I have no problem with Michael doing a presentation. All I thought would be fair to explain to Honorable members what is the situation, and so that tomorrow, because this is really not what we wanted, so that tomorrow we don't get questions. So in future, if we are to call Michael in future, I don't think he will come when we want the rest of the people that we wanted, because we would have had it. Because there are specific issues, and there are specific companies that are said not to be transforming, and that's why we wanted one on one. The smaller companies that we wanted, and so on. So I just have no problem. My approach was to explain to you the situation and to give guidance. That is what I said. We continue with Michael, I've got no problem. We don't continue, I have got no problem. But to be fair, I had to explain. Okay, we'll take it from there, and I am Dumzan Damede, I've met you as chairperson of this committee. I will introduce ourselves so that you know from my left onwards.
Kenneth Sinclair, Northern Cape.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Elder Van Lingen from the Eastern Cape. Good morning, Masboko de Khali, Limpopo Province.
Good morning, Abdullah Khalif, welcome to the social.
Morning, I'm Temba Kubula from Communication Services of Parliament.
Good morning, my name is Zona Lula from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, my name is Johan Durant. I'm the Minister's Liaison Officer.
My name is Michael Casales, the Assessor.
For your introduction,
my name is Michael Casales, the Assessor.
The member who's just sitting down will introduce himself, and then we will take it up from there.
Morning, Chair. I'm sorry that I'm late. My name is Freddy Adams from the Western Cape.
Colored.
Mr. Tatalia, you can continue.
I'm going to get back on again. Working. Good. Thank you very much. Morning, Honourable. I'm sure that's not an official title, as when we went to the Minister to Zimbabwe 3 or 4 years ago. It was a bilateral between the Tourism Minister of Zimbabwe and the Tourism Minister of South Africa. In terms of part of our industry, that's the sector we recognise, and I think the government recognises too, the tourism doesn't just happen in South Africa. The tourist from overseas sees the entire region as one country. And the more we can cooperate with our fellow countries, that it is. But it was quite funny when the portfolio committee arrived from the hotel staff referred to them as the Honourables. So now you're all the Honourables. Thank you for inviting me. Sorry that there was a mix-up in communication, but that's really irrelevant. The point is I'm here and that we want to be here. It's an interesting topic, causes lots of contention in the broader press, but I think as an industry we're very committed to the process of transformation, and that's why I was able and keen to clear my diary and come down today. So I'm very glad that you've actually decided to let me speak, because that does sort of justify the day. But I think we're in a state of transition would be the right word. We've just been in the process of reforming the Tourism BDBE Charter Council. But let me go through introductions myself. I am CEO of SATSA. I'm fully paid for by SATSA. SATSA is the Southern African Tourism Services Association. We're responsible broadly for the inbound industry, and I'll get into a little bit of detail of how that works. But I also sit here as a board member of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, TBC. And as the name suggests, the Tourism Business Council is an independent body that is the umbrella, apex umbrella body that represents private sector interests in tourism broadly. I also am newly appointed to a brand new committee, which is the Charter Council, and we only had our inaugural meeting on the 10th of September, but I'm now a committee member of that. And so I've been sent off to give you greetings in the name of TBC and in the chairman, Mr. Monwabisi Fandeso, from the Tourism B Charter Council, sent his greetings as well. And in fact, what he asked me to say to you is, we've only just got started. Now, as to the reason to why the Charter Council didn't get going or stopped or whatever it might be, I think that had a lot to do with the process of moving from what were the structures in SA Tourism and its relationship to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, and in the whole creation of the new structure in the National Department of Tourism. Now, we as an industry, we're very excited to get an independent ministry all of its own. And we accept that in the process of a 2-3 year transition from a DEET to the NDT, things happen, and we're trying to find the places. Just to give you the private sector view on this, we in fact had written letters to the Minister of Tourism in the new, when he was structuring his new department, and said, we know that this is an issue that's important to the country, it's important to the cabinet, it's important to us. We know he shares our views. Could we formally request that a proper council be reformed? I think there's also something to do with the DTI codes of conduct and whatever it is. DTI took more seniority over this. But we said, as private sector, we want to get involved in this process. So we want a charter council that can manage the process and interact, so we can form a flow of communication up and down and try and lead the industry. Well, we're excited that that has been done. But in fact, just in the lead up to it, there was a bit of a, where does this belong? Does it belong inside South African Tourism? We put a temporary period, that's where it is housed. Does it belong in its entirely set up? Do you buy another fax machine, another office, another waste resources, or do you put it in the spot? There's a whole lot of ongoing. The Tourism Business Council sent a formal letter to the Minister saying, look, if it's an issue, we as the Tourism Business Council are willing to house the Secretariat to run it, because we feel that this is an absolute necessity. Minister then wrote back to us formally and said, thank you very much, but having gone through the legal processes and consulted DTI, it would be best to house it inside NDT, National Department of Tourism. So I think, broadly speaking, it sits under the DDG of Research, Monitoring, Policy and Evaluation, Mr. Victor Farage, who I had hoped was going to be able to come. I see on the program he was originally intended to be here, but because of the court, he's unable to be. But I'm sure if you were to try and arrange another time, he'd be more than willing to come down and attend. What Mr. Monwabisi Fandeso, the private sector person who's the chairman of the Charter Council, did ask me to relate to you was that we've had our first meeting on the 10th of September, and that was it to get to know you so everyone could understand. We went through the terms of reference, went through all the legal stuff, what's involved, and we didn't really get to much, but we've got it up to express what it is we want to achieve. We have set up a meeting on the 26th of October, which is a strategy session as to how the new council will go ahead. What are our objectives going to be, how we find research to establish the baseline so we can see, monitor our progress where we are now compared to where we are in the future. So the chair said, he apologizes that you've jumped the gun with us a little bit, but that's neither here nor there. He's very happy at some point to come down and talk to you as the council once we have a grip on what it is. And he'd be very happy if you could submit questions that you want us to consider. In fact, we'd be happy to consider them during the strategy session on the 26th of October, because it would give us guidance as to what parliamentarians are thinking as well, and that's one of the key constituents of a council like this. So, having given you that as a background, what I'd also like to do is add to some of the documents I saw your researcher, Abdullah, just to add to the, he gave an email that I was very kindly sent, thank you very much, some of the best, some of the background research he's done for you. We're very proud of the fact that in tourism as an industry, we feel that transformation isn't just an issue that it's a political issue. It's something that has to fundamentally change. If we are an industry, as we say we are, and we are, it's very broad-based, because it can occur across most of the country. You don't need platinum under the ground to actually have tourism working. You just need an active tourism community in terms of service orientated, something to offer as a product and an exciting way to market yourself, it needs to be widespread in terms of all those who benefit. If it's not going to be widespread in terms of those who benefit, it's not going to grow. So our sustainability is not just about sustainability businesses, it's about the sustainability of the industry. And that was why when the codes were first mooted and came out in 2003-2004, we as an industry got together, Minister von Skolpeck with Minister of Environment, Affairs and Tourism, and we consulted with him as the private sector and agreed, and he set up the first of the council then to say, okay, here are the working groups for the different sectors in the industry, start coming up to develop what we need to do to put into our code. And we were slightly annoyed that we were the second industry to develop our own charter. The first one was the Home Builders Association, pitched us to the post by a week, and that's pretty sad. But we understood why they needed to be in a rush, because they were receiving lots of RDP money to build houses throughout the country, and they needed to make sure that the industry, to receive government money on such a large scale, had to make sure that the industry that they were building and building contractors, etc., was fully compliant with the BE process. But we feel very proud of the fact that we didn't just go for a the charter, we went for a full scorecard, and so we're a fully independent one. In fact, we were a lot faster than most of the rest of the industries to grapple with this, and so on a number of occasions now we've had DTI come up with generic codes of conduct, which we've then had to reintegrate with ours. So we've gone through a couple of periods where we've had to reassess what we had wanted originally on our scorecard and reintegrate with the DTI, and I think now that DTI has released theirs again, we're going to go through another process to see how do the new codes the DTI wants to do match with what we had set ourselves as an industry. So we've always been an industry that's speaking from the private sector side, not just speaking for collective government and private. We as an industry have been very keen to drive the transformation agenda. In our own association, you'll see a little bit about who SAT is, but we've signed MOUs with the Charter Council in both forms, and we'll probably sign another one if that's what the council wishes, to show our willingness to work with it. We, whenever the council asked for work, we willingly participated in what was hoped to be a baseline study, which was supposed to be, we conducted in December 2010, January, February 2011, and our members willingly participated. But there may have been some problems with the structure. It may not have been as rigorous an academic study as we'd hoped. But that you could probably put to the department. I think Mr. Victor Draga has that report. We've never seen it, but I think it's probably not given the answer that we want in terms of the academic rigorousness. But that was certainly one of the discussions in the Charter Council meeting on the 10th of September, was to work out these baseline figures. And the industry has indicated they'll be very happy to participate in any research that's done so we can see where we were, where we are, and where we're going, what the trends are. Because until we can see what it is that we're doing or not doing, we can't take corrective action. So most of it becomes anecdotal, and unfortunately anecdotal is not doesn't give the basis for the good progress we want to achieve. We have a feeling that significant progress has been achieved in the industry, certainly in the accommodation and car hire sectors, but I think that's probably why we're having this meeting today, is because we want to talk about tour operators in particular. So why was I sent down? I was a board member of TBC who's available, but I am the CEO of SAT. So let me just give you a little bit of background. I think you'll get some notes. I have copied it across to your agenda. There we go. It's there now. Quite literally hot off the press. That'll give you 9 slides as to who we are and who I am. So shall I run through that with you now? SAT is the Southern African Tourism Services Association. And we like to think we stand for the mark of quality tourism in Southern Africa. Now, as I said, Southern Africa is our focus. Way back in 1969, international tourists have never really been able to distinguish the boundaries, geopolitical boundaries of the region. If they come down here, they want to see Kruger, Cape Town, Etosha, Okavango, Big Falls. Now to them, that's one holiday. And often when you talk to tourists directly, they'll say, I'm coming to your country. And they talk about South Africa, and they list all those items. They come to learn that there's no point in trying to tell them that one's in Botswana, one's in Zimbabwe, and one's in Namibia. It sort of glazes right over them, and you bottom end of Africa. So we work collectively, and our members sit in various parts of the Southern African one. And actually we've come to this conclusion about 10, 15 years ago. If a tourist is going to aspire to get on an aeroplane and come to Southern Africa, if on a 20-day period they're going to spend 10 days in South Africa itself, that's 10 days of something which we never had before, rather than we sell it as an entire package. And that was the meeting we had with the minister in Zimbabwe. He said for many years the government in Zimbabwe and the tourism authority has been upset the South African tour operators sell Big Falls as if it was their own. And Minister von Schalkwyk responded and said, well then please feel very welcome to sell Cape Town as Zimbabwe tour operators as if it was your brand product. So we see the mutual benefits. So we've always been from Southern Africa, but we are based predominantly in South Africa. That's why I use the South Africa sideways flag that we use for unified branding purposes. So we were set up as an association in 1969, and predominantly to do with the inbound side. As you can see, we were a founder member of the Tourism Business Council. There's three associations set that up, ASATA, SATSA, and FEDASA. Back in 1987, it was called initially Tourism Liaison Council. We put in Business Council. Later changed the name so people didn't mistake us for the government department. That still happens. So we're now thinking of calling ourselves the Chamber of Tourism. Although the Chamber of Mines is not doing well at the moment, so maybe we'll hold on to that thought. So, what is inbound tourism? Let's just finish with the rest of the association. That's our Tourism Business Council fits in. We as an industry have come from a situation where we are relatively small. We're not so small now, but certainly back in 1984, as we were set up, we had to convince a number of people that we had a role to play in society, certainly with government and with the Job Summit in 1994 and with the new government taking control. We spent a lot of time as an industry lobbying to government to say, look, job creation is going to be one of your mandates, it's going to be a critical thing. We're an industry that can create jobs if things go well. So there's a lot of lobbying to government. There still is. Not so much at a national level. I think our relationship with the National Department of Tourism is superb, with national other departments mostly very good in working, good working relationships. We do a lot of lobbying sometimes with departments like the Department of Home Affairs to sort out issues of visas, immigration issues, etc. And in fact, we work as a team, the National Department and the private sector, and the National Department now has an MOU between a number of the departments such as Home Affairs. But at provincial level and at municipal level and at regional level, there's still an awful lot of work to help to get the tourism product working. So our role with government is still to go. We still have to teach the press a lot of what we need to do. Certainly negative reporting and things is not good, but I would have to say the amount of work we've done over the last 10 years combined, government and private sector together, and certainly the good work we did through the World Cup has convinced the press to take us more seriously and to report very sensibly in most cases on the issues. So they will report it, we just give them the information, build a relationship, and they come back to us to understand it better. But also to get other parts of the private sector, banking, mining, etc., to take us more seriously. So in terms of the sort of lineup, you can see a number of the members. I'll go into the next slide, shows you some of the other ones. There are certain big companies who would want to be members in their own side. So for example, First National Bank is a big sponsor of the Tourism Business Council, a platinum sponsor. But then the association, FEDHASA stands for the Federation of Hospitality South Africa, that's your hotel group. ASATA is the Association of South African Travel Agents, and that's your outbound grouping of travel agent groups, SATSA, the tour operators inbound. Other big companies such as people like Toko Sun or Southern Sun, as you know them, etc., may want to be members directly. TEP is the Tourism Enterprise Partnership. That's a partnership between business, originally the Business Trust, and now housed in Department of Tourism. It's the development agency we've created specifically to do mentoring and development of small businesses. It works very well. Thompson is an interesting one. At the far right-hand side, you see the Collector of Funds for Marketing. That's a world first. You'll see around the world a number of places do collecting of levies to help create the funds for marketing. It's mostly done at the city level. America is a classic case where you'll have the Las Vegas Convention Bureau and they collect a 1% bed levy on all hotels in Las Vegas. We were the first country in the world and still the only one to do it on an absolutely national basis. And there was a lot of negotiating work with the department and the private sector to keep it out of the fiscus so that the entire amount of money flows into marketing. The TBC, Tourism Business Council, is the home of TOMSA, and it's a voluntary collection process. If you go to the hotel and see 1% on your invoice at the bottom, you can choose if you wish to say, I don't want to pay that. Most people don't. That is then collected by the hotel, paid across to Tourism Business Council of South Africa, and then we as Tourism Business Council give that over to South African Tourism to be used for marketing. I think last year we did 104 million rand, the year before 97 million rand, so it's a significant amount of money. But that was part of getting tourism to be taken seriously by Cabinet. Treasury said, listen, if you guys aren't putting money in yourself, why do you want us to put money in? and we thought good idea. So what we originally had as an idea was that we would have for every rand we raised for this tourism marketing TOMSA scheme, Business Trust would put in another rand and National Treasury put in another rand. So it was getting 3 rand for every rand we raised. So successful was it that that didn't need to last for more than 4 years relationship. Business Trust see that started something, Treasury said, okay, we see what the money has produced. We also see the increase in tourists that the money has produced. And so it continued. So that's it. So that's why we don't have a tourism tax as such. It's a voluntary collection. And there's an administration fee that goes to TBC. The rest goes through in transfer to South African Tourism, which supplements their marketing fee funds. Because as you can imagine, the RAND struggles when you're buying advertising and certain other costs in an international environment into RAND to dollar, pound, and euros, etc. Other names down the bottom, SAACI, the South African Association of the Conference Industry, SALTA is a group you may well want to speak to. They're the tourism grouping inside NAFCOC, the National Federation of the Back Business Federation. They have a tourism grouping such and are members of us. SARALA, the South African Vehicle Rental Leasing Association, SATEC, the South African Youth Travel Committee. NAA is the National Accommodation Association. So now why do you have accommodation and Fedhauser? Fedhauser tends to be the larger hotels, and not exclusively, but larger hotels. They tend to work on 10 or 15 rooms and above would be Fedhauser. 10 or 15 rooms and below would be National Accommodation Association, which would be mostly guest houses and B&Bs. So smaller individually owned properties, one-offs, etc. So that's sort of broadly the collective inside TBC. There's some of the branding logos. So Fedhauser is probably the oldest association in South Africa. I think it dates from about 1927, 1928 in some shape or another. And it represents a variety of things. Now, as you see, there's a number of associations. We get accused, why are we so big? Well, in an industry that has thousands of companies and thousands of locations across the country, it makes sense that they would have clustered into places of their own interest. So, for example, SATSA does inbound, Fedhauser does operational hotel issues, SATA does travel agents, etc., etc. But you find member companies who are members of all three. For example, Talk of Sun, the Southern Suns, as you would know them previously, is a member of Fedhauser fundamentally. That's where the operations directors go, that's where they argue about liquor licenses, they try and sort those problems out, negotiate together with DSTV for bulk licenses, etc. But their marketing directors probably feel he gets business from the travel agent, so someone will go and be, so they'll be a member of the SATA, and they'll be a member of SATSA because they get business from the tour operators. So there's that aspect. So you'll see them all scattered all the way through. In terms of some of the other logos I've got there, I'll just put Saboa there. It's not a formal association yet. We work very closely, South African Bus Owners Association. And yesterday, SATSA, SARALA, and Saboa representing the tourism sides of passenger transport land industry. We had a very long session with the Department of Transport, arranged finally by the Minister of Tourism. And we've got 12 years of the issues to sort out. It was a remarkably productive meeting for things to move forward. The other logos you could see there that I haven't spoken about, Voart is a new one which I should put on. That's the Vocational Ownership Association, the Timeshare Guys. There's a significant amount of domestic tourism that goes there. Quite a significant amount of foreign tourists also go in through the RCI swap outs from around the world. So it's a significant property owners and developers and resort developers group that we wanted to get in because we wanted to deal with domestic tourism issues as well. And then the bottom one, well, SATEC, let's just finish that, starting the Youth Travel Confederation. That was the groupings known as backpackers. The backpackers is a sort of older name. There's a lot more money in it. Still younger people who want to pay for experience, not to go in glamorous five-star. They don't care the quality of the bed so long as it's clean, but they'll spend into experience. And we find that's a fantastic market, A, for the money it brings, because they travel throughout the country. They tend to have longer periods of time to travel. They get to the rural areas, and they like interacting with communities. And then, that's because they're at the university sort of level, when they have kids and come back in 10, 15 years' time, you get family travel as a result. If you treat your youth travel guides superbly well, you often do wonders for your reputation as a destination. These are often people who are going to become business leaders because they're sort of white-collar leaders. If they're going on long-haul holidays at the university level, often means they have an interest in the rest of the world. And so they're more open and receptive to international trade and all those kinds. So it's a long-term good relationship we need to foster. The bottom one, fair trade in tourism, is another world first. We've got a fair trade in tourism in South Africa, leaving space for it to happen in the rest of the world. And perhaps if you've travelled internationally, you'll see, and I'd like to talk about that at some point right at the end, you will see there's a big move in certainly North America and Europe in particular to brand products, fair trade coffee or fair trade bananas, where they want to make sure that the benefit for buying the product in the shop in Europe flows to the people in the country where the goods were produced. Because up till recently, we found that coffee and bananas, just to use those examples, over 70% of the money is retained in America, not actually in Puerto Rico where the bananas are grown. And so the community actually stays poor, the people in America get richer at the expense of the consumer in Europe. And so there's a breakthrough attempt in Europe to say, listen, we want to deal with suppliers of food and good food where the communities are looked after and a good investment. It was a project started, funny enough, by an American lass who's married a South African. She came out with this idea while she was here and got funding from the IUCN, the International Conservation Union in Switzerland. And she started this, that we should do fair trade not just on bananas and coffee and something, we should do it on tourism. So it's a world first, and she's worked with their funding, so there will be other fair trades from other parts of the country in the future. But she's also part of Genevieve, part of our grouping. And that's a significant one where the topic today of BE fits, is a crucial one. There's a blend of people, environment, and sustainability, and so BE is a critical component of that, and welcomed by the industry. All right, so that's a grouping on who TBC is, and the voice, the concept at the top, One Voice for Tourism, is that Tourism Business Council is the apex association to talk to the, whoever it might be. Let's go on to that one. So, just to get into what SATR is, what is inbound? When we started in 1969, predominantly what we were trying to do was to focus on international tourists. Now that definition of inbound has changed, it's matured to a much more broader one, and essentially the best way to understand inbound is to understand what outbound is, and I'm sure you all travel lots, as honourable as you get to travel across the countryside more than you probably want to. So you've got a good relationship with your travel agent, I'm sure. Now a travel agent is predominantly your outbound company. They work with you to get you away from home or from your place of business. Once you've left home, you're now away from your own environment, you now become you come into the net of inbound, because somebody's got to look after you. An airline's got to fly you, somebody's got to transport you, take you on a tour, go to a hotel, feed you in a restaurant, go to a museum, game reserve, all of those things fall in the inbound ambit. So what we've come to define ourselves as inbound is anyone who's away from home, who's willing to spend money to be looked after, and that's the critical part of doing business. The customer's got to be willing to spend money with us. So we no longer care whether you're international or not. We don't care whether you come from Cape Town, Lusaka, or London. As long as you're coming and spending money, you're an inbound tourist and you're therefore welcome. And so that's part of our drive to increase our regional penetration. It's also because we think there's a lot of money to be made out of the region and in Africa in particular. There's still a lot of money to be made out of international tourists. There's a lot of new markets to be made out of. And there's a significant amount of money and people that need to be moved around as domestic tourism as well, which could help fill the processes of tourism to make sure we have an even flow of business throughout the year. So inside SATR, the Inbound Association, we want to be seen as the most sought after and recognized endorsement good business practice. Now, why was that important? Way back in the 60s, and still today, when you travel long haul, you have to pay in advance. And that's a bit of a scary concept. You hand over money to someone who's miles away, and then fly 10,000 miles away from home, arrive at an airport, and no one's there to meet you. So in order to not be defined as a country where people would steal your money and not provide the services, we created this idea of we'll form an association, and that's where you get the SATR logo at the top right-hand side, sponsored by ABSA, put that in there. So that if you see that on the business card of the tour operators working here, we will have done the checks to make sure that they're of good quality. Are they registered with the SARS? Do they have a tax clearance certificate? Are they registered for the permits they need for their vehicles or aircraft or whatever? Do they have the right insurance, et cetera, et cetera? All of those things so that an international company can say, I want to deal with good quality companies who will do a good service, but will do what they're supposed to do. And we do the checkup on that. So we provide information on who our members are to the broader community of people, the channel, the suppliers who would come to and look to do business with South Africa, saying, these are people who pay their debts, do the right thing, etc., etc. So as part of that, we do a check. It's a requirement to become a member. It's not just a membership fee that's required. And we do an annual check where the document, all the documentation is checked on the members. So if they want to be on our listing on an annual basis, they have to have complied with all our requirements. So that's what it is we do. Non-profit association, in the old days, Section 21, now in the New Companies Act, Section 21 has dual meaning. We're still a non-profit, member-driven, voluntary association. We're not exclusive, and we're not given any mandate by government to be exclusive at all. So we represent businesses from small to large, of all aspects of the business. People who want to deal with inbound tourists and tourism would be members, either as tour operators or people who want to sell or supply services too. And you've got to prove your adherence to these high standards on an annual basis. We've also created another world first. South Africa's full of these. A little part of the logo says bonded. We've got a common insurance scheme, again, to try and help offset the potential fears that a customer might have overseas about handing money over. It's a common guarantee, insurance held by all of the members together, whereby any member who has the... So if a customer puts deposits with a SASSA member who happens to go out of business, goes into involuntary liquidation. Obviously, we're not going to do voluntary because you could run up a huge amount of debt. Debt closure company expect insurance to pay. We don't do that. But if they were trying their best and they failed, there is an insurance scheme. Not a great amount of money, 1.5 million rand on an annual basis, but they could try and recover some of their deposits. It's a start. It's the first time that bonding scheme has been done anywhere in the world by the private sector alone. Mostly it's done on an outbound basis of travel agents. This is the first time it's been done on an inbound basis. And we did it for two reasons. One, to make South Africa look a little bit more attractive, but also to balance the playing field between the large companies and the small companies. Large companies have all sorts of insurance in place, and so they have an unfair advantage if they look more reliable. So a smaller member would be of a certain quality because he's met our requirements, and B, he's got this little insurance policy to act as a backing. Certainly as we've moved into the online booking sphere, that's what we've done to help the smaller members to be able to compete with online travel and getting a reputation on the web, etc. As part of leveling the playing field. Committed to transformation, I found out that we put on every slide, not just for today. We signed our second MOU with the A Tourism Empowerment Council body, and I said we may well sign a third with this new Tourism Charter Council. We see that as part of the development of the tourism industry, it's fundamental to its development. One of the things we've done as part of the process is we helped create the Tourism Mentorship Program, first one done here in the Western Cape. It works with provincial funding, so we've worked together to create the concept. The province puts up the money, and then we create this process whereby 15 or 30 small businesses are then helped to develop, and we find the mentorship comes from the existing members. So they put up their hours and their skills to help the smaller members. And that started in the Western Cape in 2003, rolled out to KZN and Northern Cape, and we probably will be starting one in Gauteng as well. TP now administers that predominantly. It's not something we want to hold on to. We just started the concept, proved that it would work, and working with the Tourism Inspired Partnership to make it work even further. Alright, so we will constantly get our members to volunteer their time to help, and we do try and create the environment for small businesses. That's part of the process. The other one is to help them in the process of going from small to large, because it's all very well having lots of SMEs, but our ultimate objective would be to have self-sustaining SMEs in our mediums, not small, and mediums to become large. That's where we want to go. We also run quite a unique training course of our own, the Tour Operator course, developed. A lot of people go from tourist guides, want to be in tour operating. We give them a week-long course, often funded by municipalities or provinces, so that people can see what is it involved in before they go and buy huge investments in vehicles. Just to give you an understanding, we have to do another one of these soon. 2006 was chosen as the year because FIFA arrived and Match arrived and said, who have you got, what have you got? In order to make sure that we got our product used for the World Cup, we did a survey of what our members were. So only 58% of the members responded, which from tourism is a huge response. And we worked out with 6 billion rand in direct revenue, 25,000 permanent jobs, 33,000 beds, 17,000 seats in various vehicle categories. That's probably grown somewhat, but we have to do another survey. Our members are notoriously busy at all the peak time. So we'll do one again, but it gives you an idea of what it is we are capable of doing as SACs ourselves and as part of the broader tourism industry. All right, now let me go stay there. All right, let's say who SACs is. In terms of the topic I was asked to talk about, one of the key things, and again we talk about the fact we participated willingly, but we'd like to know where it is we stand. So we're going to work to create with the council to understand where we stand with these empowerment certificates. You guys, in fact, when you asked me why is there a slow transformation in tour operators, so that means you're probably also anecdotally aware we probably think the situation to be, that we think accommodation is superbly well done, and the car hire industry, for example, has achieved very well. Certainly the travel agent industry has done very well. I think the simple reason and the answer to why these other sectors have transformed is in terms of the carriage process. Most tour operators don't deal with businesses in South Africa in terms of the source of business. Now, that's not an excuse, it's just a description. Also, most tour operators fit in the small to medium category of whatever color they are, tend to be family-owned, mom-and-pop type situations with a very flat structure. There's an owner, usually a husband and wife type scenario, and then you're into the staff. There's no middle management layers that allows space for the development. However, in the large tour operator side, was hoping that Thompson's would come and explain their situation. Thompson's, Springbok Atlas, Tour Vest Grouping have all done, as I understand it, particularly Tour Vest in particular, taken great strides to make sure that they do comply and exceed the requirements of the council. So where you have large companies with multiple layers of management and management staff, etc., and the shareholdings and deals that can be done at a shareholder ownership level, there's more scope to be able to move quickly to do it. What we've been challenged and we've been attempting to do over the years is to try and get the smaller businesses to understand the QSE, the qualifying small enterprises between the 2.5 to 35 million, where they only have to comply with the 4 of the 7 pillars so that you can take ownership out of the sector. And we have had some success there, but we're still looking for ways to drive more penetration. But again, without a baseline study, we can't actually give you scientific evidence as to how many we are. On a snapshot, I sent out an email when I got the email on Monday. I was sent a thing to my members on Tuesday morning saying, listen, I've got to go and pop into Parliament. I've got to go and talk. Who's got some stuff? In one day, 100 members responded, sending in their certificates just to say, listen, we've done it now. So there's a willingness again to share information. What I would like to do is more rigorous work is to see when people have the B certificate, could they send every certificate for each of the years they've had it? So we can see and track almost a graph how many started, so you get almost as a build-up of the number of certificates, companies that have been certified. And then also to track, so maybe they're level 4 on the first one. Are they going up to level 3, level 2, level 1? Or are they scoring more points within the same levels? Is there growth in the development? Because that would tell us where the issues are and what we can do to develop and to encourage. That's certainly one of the things I will be driving, because I want that research and I will push my members. We've been talking within SATSA. It's our annual review this year. We'd like to people, member companies, to submit their certificates so that we can actually start to build this picture and share it with the council research and with the NDT themselves. One of the things we've done as an industry, we talked, remember, about the TOMSIR scheme, the tourism marketing scheme, money, the 1% bed levy, as it were. We've expanded it from hotels to the three sectors, tour operators being one. One of the carrots there that I felt was a very good one, and a lot of members have thought was very good, was that if you are a Thompson levy collector, you get 3 extra score points in your tourism scorecard to reward them for doing that. So because there's a benefit to the entire country in terms of the money created and collected, those who participate in that scheme should be rewarded. And we find those sort of cooperative deals between different schemes do achieve additional benefits to the creation of Thompson revenues and likely also the scorecard, but in also raising the funds. So I think that's the avenue we'd like to go down, is those sort of carrot ones. We feel that the stick side is very well covered in the Act, but I think we want to keep making sure that people aren't avoiding. Fronting and avoiding and all those sort of things, I don't think have got any place in what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a genuine society where the businesses are growing, and that's the way forward. One of the other aspects we would like to report to you, I'll get on to some opportunities later, but let's deal with some of the awkward ones. If you talk to the conference industry or the hotel industry, they'll tell you this is all very well, we've got acts in place, but we need to encourage government business to actually do what they say they're supposed to be able to do. Because we have a voluntary BE scheme, we have a voluntary grading scheme that also sits within the grading council, and we have a voluntary TOMSA levy collection process. All three of which, if you do properly as a company, are going to add a certain amount of cost to your baseline structure. The problem then is, often government departments, not just at national level, but mostly at the city and provincial level, will go with the cheapest quote. So the industry is saying, well, why did we voluntarily do what we said was good for society, and government rewards the guys who didn't do anything because it's cheaper? Okay. So we've got to work together to try and get that message out. And we certainly, as an industry, won't do industry functions at venues unless they are graded, Thompson levy collected, and have a BE scorecard. So that's our commitment, and we're going to drive that process, and we'd like to know how we can work with other parties, such as yourself, whoever, to get that message out so that we reward those who do the work. The more companies we get from the hotel side, the more companies we get from the conference side, the more travel agents, the more bigger corporates, the more they will be asking their suppliers, and they'll be asking their own guys that they give work to, and saying, listen, are you scorecarded? If so, yes, because it helps them with their own scorecard. Why are you not, and how can we help you to develop? Because remember, they get EDD points and CSI points for helping develop small businesses to conform. So the more we can get on the big side by spending government, the more the cascade effect and pressure comes from both sides. On an international side, I think this to me, from an international inbound tour operator perspective, which is where most of the tour operators focus on, and quite understandably because that's where large amounts of money have to be made, there is an opportunity with that fair trade. Remember we talked about the fair trade in tourism logo, the fair trade concept. In some of our traditional markets, and predominantly in the rest of the world, we see the growing markets of China, India, Brazil, the BRICS kind of countries. But they're not so interested in fair trade issues. The traditional markets, which still produce large numbers of tourists and large amounts of money, even though they're under pressure and they're not growing as fast, have an interest in fair trade issues. Your European countries and your North American countries in particular. And responsible tourism is the new sort of buzzword that I feel we could work with. Now remember, responsible tourism is an idea, and this goes back to the fair trade concept. It's not just about green. Green is big. If you go anywhere in Europe now, you'll see green labels on anything, any shopping center you go into. You go to your equivalent of a Pick and Pay and Asda or whatever, your Tesco's, and you will see everything's labeled in terms of green and its impact on the environment. The consumer is buying green out of preference. If the two products are exactly the same, and one is green and one is not, they buy the green one. Okay. So we know that's a trend. Hasn't yet translated massively into tourism spend, but there's a starting to be a process. And there are about 130 different labels in terms of greenness around the world. The one I see is, well, there's two. The predominant one is along the same concept of a company called Travel Life. What they want to do is look at the people-based aspect and the greenness. So it's not just about the greenness of the environment. Responsible tourism is responsible, sustainable development where the earth and the people are looked after. And we can take that as a concept and feed this into, because, again, we are a world first. We're the only tourism destination in the long-haul tourism market that has a BE certification process. And what is a BE certification process if it isn't a process of making sure that the local population of the country of South Africa is looked after as in investments in the companies, investments as staff, the investments are made in them, and that we're transforming the industry to the benefit of people. So again, something that we did inside South Africa for completely different political reasons now gives us a world first that no one else in the rest of the world could have. Now what Travel Life's done is they've gone from the buyer side and got a collective of large outbound tour operators in Europe together and said, listen, we're not going to make a change unless we do buying different. So we've got to teach the consumer to look for Travel Life products, and we guarantee that in 5 years' time, 50% of the rooms we buy in the rest of the world will be Travel Life accredited. So you've got big groups like TUI, Virgin Holidays, etc., making that sort of commitment. Now what Travel Life looks at, is in each country, they could work with the local country, and inside the National Department of Tourism, we have a responsible tourism section headed by Langalile Bela, Betty Tembo Langalile Bela. Very good session. He's got it now with SABS approved responsible tourism. He would be the guy Travel Life would work with to create an assessment process in South Africa, so that there's a fair assessment of South Africans versus Kenyans versus Guatemalans, wherever they are in the world. The country that has the most products that are Travel Life accredited will get the flow of business because the operators agreed to buy. So there's an idea where the flow of business may be directed by the responsibleness of the destination. We have an advantage with the BE scorecard that we have a tool that's a nationally monitored and very well run and administered process that no other country can compete with. And we should use that to our advantage. When that we start to get that in the minds of the tour operators here and the buyers overseas, I think we start to get the carrot we're looking for to work with the tour operators. I think that, in a nutshell, is how I'd like to see it. I think I'd be very willing to take questions. Just want to give you a couple of things. I always try to end on a happy note, so that's my thank you. You can see my address here, Sassadol Theatre today. A couple of other slides I like to use just to show you the scope of the opportunity that exists. That's the draft. We want to keep that draft going. You can see how tourism has developed. When we set up the Tourism Business Council way back in 87, middle of the state of emergency, you can see we were actually a small, glamorous, niche-based industry. Since we've opened up, the graph has been exponential. We've probably flattened out a little bit at the moment. I'm trying to find a nice one that does that all the way up to 2012. There was a flatness. We did very well in the World Cup, but the world economic situation was flatter than we were. So we need to get into the growth side. Now, there's a number of issues we can do to drive that. Capacity on visa issuing in India, we get a 400,000 people a year there. We've gone, to give an example, on places like India, from 20,000 arrivals in 1998 to 100,000 in 2012. It shows the level of demand that still is there. People do want to come to us, we need to skillfully do it. But in certain markets, like the European ones, if we're more, thank you very much, if we are more responsible than other people, we're going to get the business. So that shows you the graph we'd like to go with. This is the one that I do talk to you because you are a grouping on international relations. This comes from SA Tourism Strategy study. Now, initially it's a negative, but it shows huge potential. When we market internationally, 54% of the customers choose not to come, having looked seriously at them. Remember, this is looking at people in our 8 core markets, so that's US, Canada, UK, Germany, France, Netherlands, India, China, Japan, and Australia, speaking to consumers who are planning a long-distance holiday, who looked seriously at coming to buy South Africa, 54% lost due to negative perceptions. Immediately as South Africans, we knock ourselves out and say, crime, the press, In actual fact, it's more than just that. It's crime is part of safety. So when this study was done from 2000-2005, AIDS was a big issue. Okay, so cholera, AIDS, yellow fever, any of those things. Road safety, our accident rates in this country has actually killed more people than crime does, and we forget to fight about that. So from a global perspective of safety issues, 54% of the customers are lost. Now that doesn't mean they stayed home. That means those 54% got on an airplane and went somewhere else. Even more importantly, of the remaining 46%, we lose 70% of them again when they come to talk to us. So somehow what we're doing in sharing the information to the rest of the world is not quite right. Okay. Now my argument here is if you add all of those up, we can work on the perceptions. That's why you see we have this TSI, Tourism Safety Initiative, which is to help the industry get itself right so that we can say to customers around the world, we are safe, which we are. But if we start talking to them about responsible tourism and we become the world's recognized responsible tourism destination, there's a huge amount of people who are looking and didn't come. So let's just see how much that added up to. 22.25 million over 5 years. Now, in terms of our national tourism sector strategy goals, and perhaps I was remiss not to start with the NTSS. Have you all got documents? Have you all got NTSS documents? I think maybe we could arrange copies of the NTSS documents. It's the National Tourism Sector Strategy, which was developed, again, it just shows what a great working relationship we have as an industry. The government and private sector came together to create it over a year and a half period. We had a panel of experts set up by the minister that created the strategy that went to cabinet. And it's a cabinet-approved document, which we can use, as I say, when I go to transport or I go to home affairs, I throw that in first, and then they have to be nice. It's lovely. Same relationship with all sorts of cabinet ministries. And I think maybe if we can arrange for them to be distributed. In terms of that, the goals. We set ourselves goals for 2020, which talks about getting to 15 million arrivals by 2020. which will create 225,000 additional jobs, etc. There's a whole cascade of this process, and it's a very nice. There's a 200-page document, but I recommend you work with a 50-page document. It's clear. But it's something, if you're going to deal with international side, you need to be aware of. Our argument there is that if we can get 15 million arrivals, we'll go from somewhere like 2.5 million flying tourists, as we do now, the high-value ones who spend lots, into the tourism industry that create the jobs. Your high-value tourists create more jobs than low-value. Of the 15 million, we reckon about we'll go from 2.5 to 6 million flying tourists and spending money, and that should create the extra jobs, the 225,000 new jobs. My argument here is that there's 22.25 million people who did have a long haul holiday, looked seriously at South Africa, but for one reason or another, didn't come then. I think post-2010, we have a huge opportunity to talk to the rest of the world in the ways that they want to be talked to. Certainly with social media and all those sort of channels, we can find ways to talk to customers far better than we did before. And if we get this right, and combining a lot of things that we try to do, there's 4.5 million, 4.odd million tourists a year. You know, I've got a figure now. I haven't got the figure there. Divide up 22.25 over 5 years, that's just on 4 million extra flying guests who were looking at us back then and could be persuaded to come again. Plus all our new markets. I think it's very achievable to get our NTSS goal, but I certainly think that the BE scorecard process is part of our responsible tourism front, not that would be the wrong word to use in this discussion, case that we show to the rest of the world, and I apologize for using the wrong word there. We've got to work on it, and I find it quite interesting that responsible tourism was a concept invented at a conference in South Africa in 2000. The original white papers on responsible tourism sat to that. So we've got to regain our moral high ground, but it's there for us to do. Making dreams come true, I remind you why, just this is when it cracks and when it works. I want to go through that 225,000 jobs by 2020, that's 16 tourists per job, rough calculation. It could be 8, depending on the science. It's a very imprecise science. I go with the worst case scenario, 16. We need 3.6 million additional high spending tourists. That works out at approximately 550,000 tourists a year. Now, you obviously, as honourables, live in Cape Town, so I'm sure you've seen the high season, and you can see what it does to a city when there's lots of people in coaches around. That's what it looks like for the rest of the country. That's the only time we've ever achieved 550,000 people a year. And that's what it looks like behind the scenes in the industry. Now, we feel we're ready. We've got the infrastructure, we've got the people, we've got the companies, and we need to give them businesses to sustain themselves, grow, and expand. But that's what we do about making dreams come true. Okay. So I wanted to end on a little happier note. We have done it. We can do it again. We're the little country that could and did. And we'll do it again.
Thanks, my turn. As I said earlier on in the beginning, you know, our main interest was about transformation. And but we've got to know about that and so on, which we can even reserve a date for that. That is why I said in the beginning, this is what we didn't want to know, because as members of parliament, we've got a responsibility. One issue that we wanted to attend to was the issue of transformation, which we just touched a little bit on it. So if members really do want to ask questions, I'll confine that to the issue of transformation. Other questions, we can do that offline with Michael, because that is the purpose of the meeting today. We don't want to be diverted and speak about SASA and so on. That was not the purpose today. So if you have these questions about transformation, I did say that we are going to have another meeting where we are going to call all these role players, all the big guys, the Thompsons, everybody, and also call on all the small guys, so that we hear both sides. What do the big guys say about transformation? What do the small guys say about transformation? Because that's our duty, that's our responsibility. And some of the things that we have actually talked to, we've had them even from SAT, Department of Tourism, even as a strategy, we already have it. I mean, that's the first thing they have to give us as a committee, their strategy. So most of the things
try to cover, accepting of that, I think you well informed about it. Members, if you have anything to ask on our funding.
Chairperson, yes, I'm very grateful that we did have this interview because it was very informative and it was certainly very interesting information for me. So I do not believe that we must just brush it aside and not take note of it. You say that we may only ask BEE questions.
Not BEE, but transformation issues. So that's the topic of the day.
The topic of the day is that you know how many times I have tried for my guest house to get a BEE certificate through the DDI, and I was now finally referred to tourism, and it's now so many months ago, and I still am not certified yet. I mean, I'm almost certified, but I'm not certified yet. So that's the one thing. The other thing is that the Travel Life code is very interesting, and I'm wondering what the costs of that would mean to the various products, because it is every time there's a new code coming out or a new discipline or a new something, then it involves costs to the product, and that is my concern because things are becoming more expensive for the good guys, the guys that are registered. And I don't know if the squatters in the industry are not just making the money because it's cheaper to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Selingan. I think the cost is to keep that in terms of saving time. One of the things that our smaller members do respond is that the cost of all these assessments is high. Just to give you some background, even on the grading council, both voluntary does cost, and that's why we work with the sector in terms of the World Cup, was to work with TP and the departments to create a process whereby smaller properties could be graded so that they could participate in the World Cup. I have similar concerns about the cost of BEE certification. It can, on average, be around about 66,500. And what worries me is that seems to be the cost that gets charged every year. So we as an association, we're trying to find assessment companies who would do it on a reasonable basis that would scale their pricing so that smallers could participate in large. But again, that's one of the tasks we're going to set ourselves as a council, to try and find a group of them. We did have one who's become a member, and I could probably pass them on to you, who said it would be 6,000 odd rand for the first assessment, but each year it would be much simpler because it's a RIP. So there are ways, and there are certain assessment companies who do have a realistic scale, and we want to find out and promote those to our members and let the members choose the ones they want to work with. On the Travel Mind side, we are concerned about that too. The reason I found it attractive when I did the studies and went to see them overseas, and why the department's gone to speak to them too, but nothing's finalized, is that theirs was the most reasonably priced, because yes, otherwise you just have thousands of certifications. You can spend 100,000 rand on certifying yourself left, right, and center, and you haven't got a single extra guest in your establishment. So I think that's the concern for all in this whole BEE transformation process. If you want to benchmark yourself somehow, you need to be certified somehow, and the cost process to the smaller businesses is of concern. That's why I said the larger ones have done it, because they see benefit, they get extra business from government, etc., but the smaller ones have not seen necessarily the value equation. What we want to try and create is the carrot side. If you do this, this will lead to more channels of opportunity for you to get business. So I think that's what we're very mindful of. All small and medium-sized businesses have to be very careful with their memberships and certification processes. So I think, generally, we're very sensitive to that cost issue, and I think that may be impeding it, have impeded up to the process at the moment.
Chairperson, I'm absolutely shocked. When you want a BEE certificate and you get it through the DDI, which you can do virtually on the website,
correct,
it costs you 450 rand.
Correct. But people want to agree, but people want to do certification processes. So
can I
So now we sit with 6,000 rand. There's no way that that is acceptable to a small establishment. You must understand, a lot of the BEEs and guest houses are people running the establishment from their home with two or three rooms in the house. And that doesn't make this a viable option.
As I say, I'm not able to give it, but that's, in terms of the, as I understand it, that should be assessed. You can't use the DCI online process, you have to use the scorecard process that applies to tourism. That requires an agent, verification agent, to come in and assess in terms of your relation to your own individual industry scorecard. If we can get it down to 450, I would be the most ecstatically happy person on the planet.
Okay.
Yes,
I'll reserve my question for the next meeting. I have a very serious question. But it needs, for those questions, it needs you and other role players. So it doesn't serve my purpose to ask those questions because I won't get the full answer.
Sure.
Yeah, but we'll make it a point that very soon, maybe very early in the first term, we have all the role players. Mm-hmm. In one room, so that I would also make it a point that we have the whole day. Because there are many issues that we need to talk about with respect to transformation. Because to me, transformation is not about a certificate. That certificate could be fancy. It's about operations, it's about management, it's about everything. So we still going to discuss already. Let's reserve those issues. But you are free to comment on what I've said, but I do have a number of questions about transformation. And so do other members.
Yeah, I accept your comments here, but I just remind you of the offer made by the chairman of the new Chartered Council, Mr. Monobisi Findiz. I can leave you his contact details as well. If you'd like to, you could write a series of questions to him for us to consider in our strategic process as how we're going to decide how we're going to run the council, what our objectives are going to be over the short and medium term. If you'd like to have your questions taken into account at that point, please feel free to put them through. We would like to get all stakeholders' views and see if we've got common views and how we can answer them.
But just I must tell you upfront that we prefer to talk face to face. I wonder why those questions would also want to meet the chapter. So, the next meeting will make it a point, or you will make it a point that he also has.
Okay.
But this briefing was necessary to know about that. In our next meeting, I'm sure we're going to engage you very deeply. Because you seem to be involved mostly in things that we are concerned about. But in view of the fact that some of the role players are not in, it would be unfair to serious and direct questions to the other role players. We appreciate what SASA is doing. We would also want to look at SASA from its information, also about transformation within SASA. So we are not at all excluded from this transformation. Honourable members, and I presume that I see honorable government. Are you eating your head?
Yeah,
my head is eating. Oh, your head is eating. Okay.
Okay.
Is it Tatalia?
Mm.
Okay. Michael Tatalia. Very difficult for me to pronounce this. That's why I keep on saying Michael.
But you got it right first time, too. It's Greek. I think it is a Greek one.
It's Greek.
Mm.
Well, Tatalia. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Your presentation was very much enlightening. And we'll see you next time. We'll definitely call you. Thanks, Mr. Durand, for coming to observe on behalf of the department. You realize that the department is needed.
Yes. It's my pleasure.
Definitely, I mean, two units are needed here. Even those that deal with TEP, and those that deal with transformation. Honourable members, if you have a
there's no pending issue.
I've got a pending issue. Next week's program, I prefer to plan my things a week in advance here, but I don't get guidance on the program. I need a few chairpersons to indicate what's the situation.
Well, Adam.
Yeah, I haven't got the program in front of me now. As far as I know, we were meant to have gone on oversight. Like I said, I haven't gotten enough to get the secretary, but we'll inform the members in due course today. Okay. Thank you.
I must unfortunately raise my concern. You know, we've had our strategic workshop there. Issues were raised. I've requested that we go to the Northern Cape. There's outstanding issues in KZN and so on. Now, once again, it's Wednesday today. If we and the staff must now start to plan something for next week, Tuesday, we know the difficulties of getting approval and all those things and so on. So all that I'm asking is let's be professional and get some things in advance. Otherwise, when we get to these people, then once again they complain to things like late notification, relevant people is not there, and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Okay, that is noted on the house in check. But I'm sure we'll make it a point that to the information information. But next week also, I think in our program, committee's program, there will be a meeting, and we're supposed to be briefed by Torres. Next week,
Chairperson, I requested we look at the date for the 7th.
I keep checking if it is what next week, yeah?
For the 7th.
27th,
yes.
But not next week?
No.
Okay. That's why I'll deal with Honorable Adam. 27th, is it the
27th? It's a Tuesday.
No, man. Saturday. The 27th.
No. The Tuesday is the 23rd.
No, the following week.
And then the 30th.
When are we having service? Is it on the 24th?
It was supposed to be the 31st. The minister would like to be present, but he will be out of the country.
All what we're saying is that briefing by the department will try and sort it out between myself and honorable others. Because the minister wrote to me about the availability. I would request that maybe when we speak with Honorable Adam, we'll just talk dates on that. The economic development goes on a Wednesday and they go on a Tuesday. So that is not not the issue. The issue that we are going to brief the members on is about next week. And we commit ourselves that by latest 3 o'clock we would have now. Honorable Speaker.
Excuse me, may I say something? Chairperson, now if you brief us by 3 o'clock, let me tell you, you were quite tough about the Tourism Grading Council that wasn't here. Now, you're going soft. What is the domestic remedy if you say, but we are cancelling the oversight for next week and it's not been arranged and what have you? Then what? Then we get the message, we dispersed, we no action has taken place. It's now 11:30. Go and call the other secretary and we sit here and we wait till we get it. Thank you.
Okay. with our planning and things do not work like that. And they shouldn't work like that. If you force them to work like that, it will be worse. And it's not correct that in a committee meeting we discuss these things with the secretary and so on. If you say, no, we don't agree, and you don't want an oversight, you don't want it, the members are free to say so. But what we are saying from what we see is that we'll inform you what is going to happen by telling you. And we are all here in Cape Town, and it's just a matter of communication. Thanks, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.